Well, the weather is cooling down, but everything else is certainly heating up. It's October, and we're 2 weeks out from an election. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principles and Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
Barry, it's great to be back with you. I'm loving it here in Central Ohio. No rain. The leaves are getting about as nice as they're going to get. We're very close to peak. So despite our bad weather earlier, so it's really nice here. And now I've got all my cold weather stuff I should have been doing since July to get done.
Absolutely, I understand the feeling entirely. The first half of October felt like June or July, but now it's starting to feel like December again. I think things are coming back to normal in Ohio weather, and that's great because everybody's getting back into the gear of things into fall. You're right; the leaves are turning finally, starting to show. Circleville's had their pumpkin show already, so people are buying their decorations for the holidays, and the mums are being sold by the pots all over the place. It's fall in Ohio, and it's great. And of course, Chuck, being fall in Ohio, it also means that, well, since we're in a even numbered year, that there's a fairly sizable election that's getting ready to take place. Matter of fact, it's taking place right now as we speak because early voting has already started. We've talked about this on previous programs. You've talked about some of the candidates. You would strongly suggest, folks, that you avail yourselves of some of the great resources that are out there, whether it be the voter guides that groups like Citizens for Community Values and Ohio Christian Alliance and others are putting out, or whether you go online and go to like ivoterguide.com. Now, I strongly recommend iVoterGuide. They are very solid. They come at it from a Judeo-Christian perspective. They do an awful lot of groundwork to make sure that they understand who these candidates are and where they really stand on issues. And it's double vetted, Chuck. And I know that for a fact because I'm one of the oversight vetters at the end of the process for Ohio's elections. They get a group of folks who take the candidates and dig in and look at the research, and then they give them some grading. And then the oversight panelists, who are usually more seasoned veterans of the conservative pro-life and pro-family wars world, go over those recommendations and add our own input and make edits and changes and vote on them as to where we believe these candidates stand, whether they're really conservatives or whether they're like closet liberals who are hiding behind conservative PR that they're putting out in their mailers.
Like so John Kasich. I think
it's a great resource, but okay, folks, let me give you a thing. Don't go on your Facebook page trying to find it, because from what I've been hearing from some of our folks, it looks like Facebook is intermittently blocking access to iVoterGuide. I wonder why.
Yeah,
could it be that not just iVoterGuide, but CCV and others are all are suggesting a no vote on issue one, which is the drug interdiction reduction, blah, 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 sentence reduction bill that we talked about on the program last week, I think, Chuck, or maybe the week before?
We
talked about it a little while back, but then because of some technical glitches, it didn't air until last week. So,
right.
But if you remember that, and if you didn't, go over to our archive at principledpolicy.com and pull up the show, because we talk in depth about the problems with issue one. Well, the biggest problem with issue one, and of course with these voter guides that are suggesting a no vote on issue one and why Facebook won't allow them to be posted up on their site, is that Mark Zuckerberg and his wife Chan, who own Facebook, he's the founder and the controlling interest in Facebook, have pumped $2+ million into trying to get issue one passed in Ohio, and that doesn't count how much money they're spending now once they got it confirmed to the ballot. And we know they're spending boatloads of money because there are ads running everywhere. So Facebook is not a neutral player in Ohio in this election. So be careful about what you see out there. And if you don't see things, it's only because it's not following the approved storyline that Zuckerberg would like to see happen here.
One thing I'd like to let you know is I just opened up my Facebook account for the first time in weeks, and I typed in the search iVoter Guide.
Yep.
What doesn't pop up?
iVoter Guide.
Yeah.
Exactly. So folks, it's I is the letter I, voter, VOTER, guide, GUIDE.com. iVoterGuide.com. Go over there. You can type in, it'll pull a page. You can type in like your zip code or your address. It will pull up your ballot for you. It'll pull up all the elected officials, state and federal, because I don't believe they go down to local. They might be doing some local races if they're like high profiles. But you can find an awful lot of information. And again, they're not saying vote for or vote against. They're just trying to help voters become more informed as to, okay, who gives money to these candidates? Where do they give their money? What do they vote on? And how do the leaders in Ohio's social conservative world, the pro-life, pro-family leaders, believe they are conservative or not? Because those ratings, I'll tell you what, sometimes candidates and elected officials get mad and call the head of the folks at iVoter Guide and scream bloody murder about a rating that they get because they feel like they're rock rib conservatives and they might get a rating of liberal. And that's because it's not because of what you say, it's because of what you do that
yes,
your rating is
exactly.
Good.
Yeah, we
and
don't.
So I can't tout that. And CCV, Citizens Community Values, has got a voter guide. Chuck, I know you put them out in your church. We know that they've been put out in churches all over the state. And folks, if you need some for your church, you know, contact Citizens for Community Values. You can ccv.org, go over to their webpage, you can click through, and they will send you copies of the voter guide. They're doing this as a public service. It's really fantastic. I mean, Chuck, what did your folks think about the voter guide?
Well, so far they've been very impressed with it because it doesn't come right out and it's not blatant in your face. It's just basically picks key issues, tells you where the person, the particular candidate stands on particular issues. And I know what people say, well, you cherry picked. Well, of course we did. That's a dumb statement on its face.
That's only partially true, Chuck. Because just like anything else, for it to be a nonpartisan voter guide, you can't just cherry pick, you know, your own particular issues in order to skew things. You have to have, and this is, and I know because I work with CCV and I worked on the voter guide. You have to like pick a range of issues, not just issues that your organization cares about,
right?
Exactly. In order for it to be nonpartisan. And the other side of that coin is, we didn't do a thing where, oh, you send out the request for surveying and only your friends survey back, and so therefore you report their information. You don't report anybody else's. You report that they didn't respond. The director of CCV C4, First Freedom Ohio, and their team did the research. They did the hard work. When a candidate didn't respond, they went out and found their public statements, their votes, news articles, things from their own websites, and found out where they've issued positions on the issues that they wouldn't answer.
Yes.
And put that in the voter guide as well, because and it's sourced, folks. I mean, everything's footnoted. It's sourced. It's probably one of the most accurate voter guides that I've seen in a long time. And I've been proud to be associated with CCV and what they're doing, and Aaron Baer over there. They're doing a fantastic job, and they're doing it because they care that the conservative Christian vote be an informed vote, and that we don't have situations where people after the fact are having buyer's remorse because, well, I didn't know that about that guy I voted for. Well, there are a lot of resources now that you can find those things out about those candidates and cast an informed ballot. And well, I would suggest to you, iVoter Guide, CCV's voter guide, those are some great resources. Folks, I mean, we're less than 2 weeks out. This airs on Saturday. We'll be about 10 days out from the election, from November, the casting of the ballots on November the 6th. Please inform yourself before you cast your vote.
Where
you think a candidate is, find out where they stand. And look at this information. Find out how your fellow citizens in Ohio, your colleagues, the folks who work, live, and breathe in the pro-life and pro-family movement, how they see, and because we have some background working inside government, that we know where to find the information that a candidate may not want to put out to you. And, you know, cast an informed ballot. You'll feel good about it.
Yeah, exactly. And first of all, be aware that you can early vote. And in fact, I'm thinking about doing that just so I miss the Christmas rush on Tuesday the 6th.
And I certainly would advocate if people want to early vote, please do. But make sure you study.
You study up. Now, you brought up something that you and I always laugh about, and what's the most uttered phrase when we go to a meeting? Gee, you guys were right. I wish we'd listened to you.
Yeah, we hear that more often than we'd like because it usually means, oh, okay, the person you voted for, John Kasich,
exactly,
the skunk.
I'm very proud to announce that I never voted for John Kasich once.
Ever. And I wear that as a badge of honor, too. Never have, never will. Honestly, folks, Chuck and I both were screaming to the rooftops. But, of course, it's a situation where once the party regulars have picked who they want, that's what most people feel they're stuck with, and so therefore they can't do it. Now, you know, we've got a group out there right now because of this governor's race, Chuck. There's a group out there right now that's basically saying don't vote for either one of them.
Yes, exactly.
And they're taking a lot of heat from some of our friends about it. And, okay, I get it from both perspectives.
Yep.
I get the perspective of the Ohio Liberty Coalition who has come out publicly saying that they are advocating that liberty-minded voters not cast a vote for either Republican candidate Mike DeWine or Democrat candidate Rich Cordray. They're actually and some of them are saying cast your vote for the Libertarian because, you know, if the Libertarians get 3% on the ballot, then they get ballot access, and that's kind of their goal. And it's like, okay, yeah, but you know what? I, for the same reasons I wouldn't cast a vote for X and Y, I won't cast a vote for Z either, because Z's policies and positions aren't much different than X and Y's on certain things. And of course, then you've got folks who, you know, believe that, you know, if we don't have a certain party in control, then, you know, the end of the world's going to happen. And I had somebody ask me that the other day. It's like, well, you know, do you believe that this is the most important election we've had? I'm like, no, but every election is important because it's really determined by who doesn't show up to vote.
Yeah.
More than it is by who does show up to
vote.
That's
very much true.
And frankly, if we get people who show up informed to vote, and certain circumstances, and I'm not saying this one specifically this year, but in certain circumstances, for groups and organizations to basically withhold their support from candidates because they're sending a message to the party establishment and the regulars that we're not just going to take whoever you throw at us from in the future. You're going to have to be more thoughtful, more circumspect about nominating a candidate next time. I get that. I don't necessarily discount that. That is important. Because we've seen time and time again, Chuck, where a certain party seems to want to take certain portions of their base completely for granted because they think you got no place else to go, and so therefore you'll take whatever we feed you. It's sort of like the scene at, what is it, Great Expectations or Oliver Twist, yes, where, okay, you come up, it's gruel. Okay, well, what? It's gruel. That's what you get. That's what, you know what? That's your only choice is gruel, so eat it and be happy.
Yeah, please.
That's changing, you know, in a new modern world of all the quick information and technology and people becoming somewhat more savvy about what's going on around them and who's doing what with whom politically. Well, I think we're going to get to a point, Chuck, where people are going to be less likely to want to just take gruel for their sustenance.
They'll be willing to listen. We have been talking about this, you and I, since we've known each other, which, gosh, now it has to be about 15 years. How old's Gracie? Because she was not quite born yet when we met.
She's 15.
Yeah, so we've known. And you and I together did the, along with several other friends, did the whole third party thing as a refuge.
Yeah.
And how'd that work out? Well, turns out that the third party guys were essentially, they were big fish in a small pond instead of small fish in a big pond. They came over from major parties to basically be allowed to run their own party, and it turned out to be just as bad in the third party scene as it was in the major party scene. So, the problem being that everybody has and wants to protect their own power structures and fiefdoms, and that particular party goes nowhere fast these days. It's we made a splash pretty quick after we had a great candidate in 2004 for president, and we all got behind him, but it was it sort of all broke apart after that. But that being said, you're absolutely right. It is gruel. We are being fed gruel. And this is exactly the Republican Party. It really has earned its moniker as the stupid party, because the whole reason for Trump was the fact that people were sick of this particular being. They were sick of being taken for granted. They were sick of being handed begging for candidates who were conservative, and being handed people like John Kasich and Mike DeWine and Troy Balderson and candidates on the national scene like Lindsey Graham and John McCain and Ben Sasse and Jeff Flake. In fact, it's really sad to see, because Jeff Flake was a Tea Party candidate. If you'll recall, he rode the Tea Party wave into office.
Yeah, well, so did Scott Brown and some others, but hey, we saw what that got him. And remember, that was the early days of the Tea Party, when they believed that it was just go in and work with the Republican Party and everything will be happy.
Well, Ben Sasse did the same thing.
Oh yeah, you got Ben Sasse, you got Jeff Flake, you had Scott Brown. I mean, you can go down the list of folks in the early phases of the Tea Party movement where they made some serious errors in getting behind candidates, and it was because of being neophytes. But the thing is, some of these Tea Party groups, like Liberty Coalition here in Ohio, have gotten more sophisticated, savvy. They've started understanding how the games are being played, and they're starting to play them back. Trust me, it's no surprise that the Liberty Coalition is saying, we don't want you voting for Mike DeWine. They're pro-gun, and his record and history has been very questionable about guns. Of course, so is Rich Cordray's. They're pro-liberty, and him as a prosecutor and then attorney general has been more of the, get tough on crime type things, and there are some clashes there. But the biggest thing was, and according to the Liberty Coalition, why they chose to issue a non-endorsement and to encourage the folks who they influenced to look another direction, was because they offered an invitation three different occasions to sit down with the DeWine Houston camp to talk about figuring out a way to endorse them, only to have the DeWine Houston camp ignore all three requests.
And then later accuse them of all kinds of things. Well, you should just give us your endorsement. We don't actually want to have to answer your questions.
Yeah, well, okay. I mean, I don't know specifically how that worked out, but the way it does work out is that sometimes you make your bed, you got to lie in it. And I I'm no big fan. I'm just going to say right now, Chuck, I'm no big fan of the idea of a Cordray administration in Ohio for 4 years.
No.
Not so much because his policies, because I think that the legislature is not going to change hands, and it's going to be as strong Republican, numbers wise as it has been. But I think it's actually going to be more conservative coming into the next cycle than it was in this last cycle with John Kasich. Now, we know that the leadership in Ohio basically rolled over and played dead for John Kasich for a long time until they realized, well, first of all, that his presidential aspirations were over with, which meant that they wouldn't get appointments to cushy jobs in D.C.
Yeah, sinecures. They wouldn't get their sinecures.
Yeah. And so now they're fighting back, but even then they couldn't fight back all that hard because they had compromised leadership, i.e. Cliff Rosenberger, who was corrupt and who's still under an FBI investigation now as a deposed Speaker of the House. You know, you had all that going on. You know, Kasich's still doing his thing. You know, he hit the news this week again because he's now, because the legislature wouldn't do what he wanted, he's using an executive order to push a solution on the basically prohibit farms in Northwest Ohio from utilizing fertilizers and other things that will go into watersheds that feed into Lake Erie, because it's that time of year, Chuck, and Lake Erie's got this big green algae.
They got a bloom, yeah.
You know what? There are blooms like that that happen everywhere on many lakes and in, especially on rivers and even at the ocean. You get those red tides, you know, around Florida when the water gets warm and there's not a lot of movement and there hasn't been a lot of precipitation in order to keep things cycling. You know, water stagnates a little bit, and algae, you know, feeding in bacteria in warm conditions grow like mad. But Kasich, you know, did it by executive order, and, well, he got criticized by his director of the Department of Agriculture, Dave Daniels, so he fired Dave Daniels last Friday. Now, think about this. This is a guy that's got 2 months left in his administration. 2 months. And yet he decides that because his director of agriculture says, you know, maybe we could look at doing this a different way so that, you know, we're not, you know, penalizing the farmers as much on this. Oh, Kasich couldn't stand any kind of dissent. So he fired the director. And we've now found out that two folks who were tied to the director in the administration, one was one of the attorneys and the other was like the director of communications, have both resigned because of it. And he's appointed a gentleman who he appointed to be the assistant director of agriculture, Tim Derrickson. Now, Chuck, you know, Derrickson's name may be familiar.
It is, yes.
He was a former legislator who, I'm just going to be quite frank, folks, we were pushing a bill on religious liberties, and Derrickson was our sponsor. And when the whole thing in North Carolina with the bathroom issue, Arizona, blew up on the gay rights issue, Kasich got cold feet, and he screamed bloody murder about it, and Derrickson, our sponsor, who we'd been working with for months and months and months to craft a bill that was, you know, workable, went out publicly and announced he was killing the bill. Now, problem was, he didn't bother to reach out to the folks he'd been working with for months and months and months to discuss it or to say, hey, guys, there's just too much going on, and the governor's threatened, you know, he's saying he's going to veto it, and leadership doesn't want to move the bill. And so I think it's better if we just, you know, fold the tent right now and try again. No, we didn't get that. What we got was getting hit with media calls because our sponsor basically backflipped on us. Okay, so we found out that, you know, okay, he's not the guy we thought he was. Well, then shortly thereafter, he got appointed to head up the funeral directors and embalmers board.
Again, a sinecure.
Now, did I mention this guy? Yeah. The guy had a farm, and he sold insurance. He wasn't a funeral director. He didn't have anything about embalming. But because he needed a place to land, and he'd been loyal to Kasich, he got a position. And then he went from that position, and then, of course, a couple things blew up with somebody on that board, and there was some, you know, questions of, you know, corruption and impropriety. And all of a sudden, Derrickson's being shifted over, and he's the assistant director at agriculture. Well, now Kasich has fired the guy who's been there for 7 years running the department well over this, over just, you know, having a different idea about how to approach the Lake Erie algae bloom issue, and has appointed Tim Derrickson, who, yes, okay, he's done some farming. So does he know agriculture? He might. Will he have a whole lot of time to do anything about it? No.
No.
Because Kasich's out in 2 months, and whoever becomes governor will start appointing their own cabinet directors.
Well, and, okay.
And Derrickson may end up staying, but I doubt he will.
You know, this may be one of those things where DeWine holds on to, because let's face it, how much difference is there between DeWine and Kasich?
Some.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I think we might be able to count on Mike DeWine being more active in dealing with pro-life issues.
Oh, yes.
Than John Casey ever was. We might be okay with Mike DeWine working. I mean, even though he said that he's for Medicaid expansion, I think he might feel that he has to work more with the legislature, because I don't necessarily see DeWine as being as autocratic as John Casey.
No, I'll concede that. Here's where the difference is. The Republican legislature judged incorrectly, I think, that Kasich had enough charisma to get himself elected to the presidency. And I think Kasich thinks he has enough charisma to get himself elected to the presidency, which gives him a different kind of cachet with the legislature than Mike DeWine will have.
Right.
Mike
Absolutely.
DeWine comes in as bruised fruit. Everybody knows it. He got unelected from the United States Senate as quick as we could get him out, and the Republican Party basically shoved him down our throats as the Attorney General. You and I were a part of a group. If you'll remember, Dave Yost, I believe, was shoved aside, who looked like he had it wrapped up for the nomination for Ohio Attorney General, and their party said, nope, this is Mike DeWine's spot. This is years and years and years ago, obviously. I think it was Dave Yost. In any case, the party came in, said, here's your guy, and everybody held their nose and voted for him, because I forget who the opponent was, but it was somebody pretty awful. Again, it's that thing with, here's your gruel.
Yep, well, there you go. Exactly.
And I don't know if you remember it that way or not. You know, I might be insane.
No, you're not insane.
It's been said. But that's the kind of junk that goes on at the party level. This is how we got some of the candidates that we have in congressional races. The congressional race to replace Pat Tiberi.
Yes.
I'm very familiar with, because, let's just put it this way. My candidate didn't win.
Right.
And, that's what we got to deal with. And I'm aware of the serious shortcomings of the guy who is going to win this race. By the way, the Columbus Dispatch today is trying to convince us that this surge of young voters register for the Ohio election. I have to laugh about that kind of headline, because more than 10,000 young people who reside in Ohio's hotly contested 12th congressional district have registered to vote since just mid-February. Well, Barry, who are those 10,000 new registered voters? You and I discussed this earlier. Who are they?
I'm sure that they're basically the kids at Ohio State.
It's new students at Ohio State.
Ohio Dominican.
Yeah. Franklin.
I mean, is it Dominican that's over there near you?
No, Denison.
Denison. Yeah, Denison University.
Yeah.
Muskingum College. I mean, yes. And the point is that the Dispatch, this is another one of those, an article looking for a point.
Yes.
an article written. I read it. It's an article looking for a point, which is part and parcel of what the Dispatch puts out these days. Okay, so great. You've had 10,000 people register. Well, okay, you look at the concentration in that district of kids who are graduating high school, who are in college, how many colleges are in the area. And just because they registered to vote doesn't mean they're going to vote. It just means that they went and registered, because sometimes, you know, you register to vote when you up your driver's license, or when you sign up for selective service, when you have to do that when you're 18. You know, sometimes you just do all this stuff. And there's no telling, Chuck. I mean, it could be that there might be a number of kids who are going to Christian schools throughout that district whose teachers have encouraged them to register to vote.
Yeah, could be.
There very well could be. I mean, it doesn't necessarily mean anything, because, okay, so what they didn't tell you was how many were registered prior to the special election or prior to the primary.
Exactly. There's another 10,000 in a potential voter base of around 300,000 or 400,000,
right,
in this district.
Yeah. That's 3%.
Yeah.
And can 3% throw an election?
You
sure
bet it can. Yeah.
Absolutely can. But has it already been tested? Yeah, it's already been tested, both in a primary and both in a special election. It didn't happen. Okay. What is the dispatch really trying to get at without saying it? We're hoping that we can get all these college students to come out and vote so we can get a blue wave in the 12th district.
We've got to get this blue wave thing. Well, okay. Yeah, okay. It's like the difference between being in the waves in the Atlantic Ocean and being in the waves in a wave pool.
Well, yeah, because sometimes in the wave pool, it can get pretty, serious, Chuck.
One's natural and one's artificial.
Okay, but I'm going to tell you right now, Charles, I'm going to make the claim, and, you know, check me in 2 weeks if I'm completely wrong. But the blue wave that has been the fabled, the touted, the legendary, the ominous blue wave that the mainstream media has been trying to pump up and generate now for 6 months, it will not be the waves in the Atlantic Ocean. It will not even be the waves that sometimes hit in the Pacific Ocean, you know, tsunami type things. It won't be the waves at a wave pool. They'll be lucky if it's the waves you make when you sit down in the bathtub. That's what kind of a blue wave we're going to be seeing.
Well, okay.
It's dying on the vine as we speak. If you take a look, okay, the biggest, probably the biggest marquee matchup in the entire country, Charles, is a little race down in Texas for the U.S. Senate between incumbent Ted Cruz and Congressman Robert Beto O'Rourke. Now, he uses Beto because he's trying to tie himself to Latin Americans, which I think is ridiculous because you think about Robert
O'Rourke.
What's his ethnicity, Joe?
Yeah, he's Irish.
Irish, okay? But he's become like the cause celeb,
yes,
of the left. And they see this, if he can win and knock off Ted Cruz, then the Trump, you know, wave is over with, and it's a signal that the Democrats are in control. It's like, well, okay, first of all, Ted Cruz is up by 8.5 points.
I was going to say, it's rapidly moving to double digits.
Over the weekend, a rally was held in Texas, I think in Houston, for Ted Cruz, featuring President Donald Trump. Now, depending on which reports you listen to, and I heard one where the numbers were very, very overblown, but here's what I heard. They had a venue for this rally that seated 18,000 people, right?
Yeah. Oh, yes.
They had pre-registrations of people saying that they wanted to get in that numbered 78,000. Now, some wag said, well, there were 14,000 inside and 15,000 outside. But then you took a look at the photo, the overhead photo that they took outside the place.
The line,
Chuck,
is, yeah.
Chuck. It made the migrant caravan coming up from Honduras look like a couple, three kids out playing stickball.
Yeah.
Okay? There had to have been 80,000 people stretching out from that convention hall in all directions, and it was thick, and it went for blocks. Okay? If the left and all their money, and Beto O'Rourke has raised almost $40 million, Charles. $40 million, most of it not coming from Texas.
No,
it's coming from Hollywood and New York and George Soros and the other change agents of the world. You know, if $40 million and your opponent can get 80,000 people to show up to a rally that holds less than 20,000?
Yeah.
I got news for you, bud. You're not winning.
Okay.
Unless you do something where you basically cheat completely, you're not winning. Cruz right now, I just took a look at Real Clear Politics, and of course that's an average of polls across the country, which means that it's subject to some pressures and changes from polling errors. But right now, they have Ted Cruz up over 7 points.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, Beto O'Rourke, how much money do you have to spend in order to wipe out a 7-point advantage?
Well, all 40. All 40 million.
All of it. That's exactly right. All of it. Now, of course, what has been showing is from the, like at the beginning of the month, a poll was showing Cruz up 5 points. Then when you moved into the middle part of the month, all of a sudden Cruz is up 8 points. So the average is seven.
Seven.
But he's but Cruz has increased his lead by 3 points in the last 2 weeks.
Yeah.
This is not okay, and this is just one. You also have Heidi Heitkamp, the Democrat incumbent in North Dakota, who has basically suspended her campaign now because of some really disparaging remarks she made about a sexual assault victim that has blown up in her face. And now even the Democrats are writing that seat off. So they're going to lose that seat. They're not picking up Ted Cruz. They're going to lose a seat that they held. It doesn't look like Kyrsten Sinema in Arizona is going to be the new bisexual leftist Democrat senator from Arizona, because Martha McSally, the sitting congresswoman who's running to fill the seat that John McCain left open, is pulling away. It's starting to come out that Sinema, during her political public tenure, has been making comments like that Arizonans are crazy.
Yeah.
That stay-at-home moms are leeches on their husbands. And, you know, she's proudly bisexual. Frankly, Chuck, I am so sick of people talking about their sexuality.
Exactly. Please,
for their political seat. It's like, so what are you trying to tell me that, you know, that's going to be part of what you do in office? I don't even want to go there, but it's like, why is that even a factor? There's the blue wave isn't happening, Chuck. Now, of course, some will crow that, you know, some seats, like Indiana, with Donnelly, who is the Democrat incumbent senator. Well, you know, Real Clear Politics average has Donnelly up by less than a point. Okay, right? But that's a swath that's a month old.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas at the beginning of October, a Fox News poll showed Donnelly with 2 percentage point lead. But Indy Politics, Mason Strategies polling, which just came out of the field 3 days ago, Braun is up by 4. Braun is the Republican challenger. That's a 6-point swing.
I was going to say 6-point swing in 2 weeks.
6-point swing in 2 weeks, and it's getting to the point where it looks like the Democrats are writing that one off, too. So that's 2 Senate seats they're going to lose. Basically, even leftist groups like, Politico, which is leftist.
Yeah, let's.
And others are basically saying that the Republicans are going to keep the Senate. And as a matter of fact, some of them are worried that the Republicans are going to pick up seats and they may have 55.
Yes.
They may get a net gain of 4 seats out of the Senate. Ben Nelson, the Democrat in
Florida,
is supposedly up by 3.5 points. But if you take a look at the polls, Scott's up, and he's up by at least 1. Now, of course, another poll which it just came out, which is, and again, when I see the on Real Clear Politics, when I see LV, which means likely voters, okay, that's great. That means it's a more solid poll. But then I see the numbers that they picked. 773, Chuck. Now, of course, other polls, it's 1,500, 1,200, 773 likely voters, and it shows Nelson with a 4-point lead.
Oh,
now.
That's too small. That's way too small a sample.
It's too small of a sample, and it's probably been cherry-picked. Because you've got to set some kind of theme in order to try to get these things done. Bob Menendez in New Jersey, who had a 7+ point lead, Bob Hugin is cutting that lead down, so that lead right now is like less than 3.
Honestly, one of the most corrupt people, he will, Menendez would steal anything not bolted down.
Well, it isn't just stealing. I think for what I heard, that one of the charges is his involvement in some kind of human trafficking ring. And whether or not there's any involvement there or not, it's a question of, are the voters in New Jersey so committed to, liberal progressivism that they would actually throw that out there?
It's New Jersey, so no predictions can be made. Now I'm seeing a poll right now that shows Rick Scott up by 0.8% in a statewide St. Petersburg survey released on Sunday. He has a very tiny lead.
Now, one that I don't think is going to switch, the Democrat incumbent is probably going to win in the Senate race, is Tammy Baldwin in Wisconsin. Now, but the problem is that Tammy Baldwin started with a 14-point lead at the beginning of the month, and she's down to 10. So even her lead is getting cut, and there's still 2 weeks left to go. A lot of things can happen, but I doubt seriously okay. That one's going to swing.
Go ahead.
That's please.
No, I want to point out before we go too far into this. If you look further down the page on the Dispatch, there's a headline on the front page, or at least on the online edition. Democrats fear blue wave slipping away. So why would the news media put out a story like this? Because they have to hedge their bets at this point.
Absolutely.
Because they've been pushing the blue wave now for months and months and months. We had people who you and I consider friends who are normally pretty savvy who were telling you just wait until after. In fact, I almost got blocked on Facebook by saying you might be the one with egg on your face, because he kept telling me I'd have egg on my face. And I said, look, there isn't going to be a blue wave. You and I have been talking about this blue wave is turning into a blue ebb real fast. We were talking about that last June.
Yeah, absolutely were. Now, because we didn't see it. I mean, we were looking at those special elections. And, of course, you know, the blue wave noise got started when a special election in Pennsylvania went to a conservative former military Democrat.
Exactly.
Who basically was better than the Republican on most Republican issues.
Now, listen how this article starts.
Okay, go.
Okay. In the closing stretch of the 2018 campaign, the question is no longer the size of the Democratic wave. It's whether there will be a wave at all.
Okay. Well, can I just say that in certain districts, there might be a little bit of a splash. But again, like we've said, there, you know, you're not seeing it. Now, what they will do is they'll try to conflate like things like a governor's race. Oh, well, if Rich Cordray, you know, happens to eke out a win in Ohio, that's a blue wave. If Andrew Gillum wins in Florida, and it's now looking like he's getting tied to ethics issues about accepting gifts from undercover FBI agents posing as lobbyists and then trying to lie about it.
Yeah.
So I think that one's probably not going to go their way. But if he wins, it's a blue wave. You know, John Tester in Montana. The sitting Democrat senator who probably will keep his seat because Montana, even though you think Wild West rugged individualism, they're pretty Democrat out there.
It's a union state.
It's a union state and it's Democrat. He's probably not going to lose, but let's put it this way. He's not going to win by any kind of margin he's used to. California. You and I talked about California earlier. It's no surprise that, you know, Democrats may pick up things in California and some Republicans may lose their seats because of the shifting demographics and things of that nature. But then again, we're now seeing that some of the Republican seats are firming up out there and the Democrats aren't going to make as many gains as they thought.
Well, look, when you have a caravan, 1,000 strong, basically coming and telling you we're going coming to invade your country and take jobs. What does that do to the people that are here? I had this discussion with...
It wakes them up.
It wakes them up. I had this discussion last night with someone who was railing against the liberals and the Democrats. And I said, ho. I said, you got to understand something about the political picture. I said, there are classical liberals and there are radical liberals. And I said, for the most part, classical liberals are nationalists. They understand that there are borders for a reason. They understand patriotism. They don't like all this nonsense with the flag. They'll be a bit more progressive on what government should be doing for you. But for the most part, they are... very reasonable people to deal with. On the other hand, are the globalists. Now, what you've got going on inside the Democratic Party right now is a fight between the old-style liberals, the essentially the Roosevelt wing of the party, and the Bernie Sanders wing of the party. And Bernie Sanders is essentially a Marxist.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
That's what you got going on inside the Democratic Party, and people are recognizing it and seeing that the Democrat Party is foisting off Bernie Sanders' clones on people, and the reasonable Democrats are backing away. This is the problem that Republicans have had for decades, and all of a sudden the Democrats have this problem. You and I were the caveman, essentially the caveman wing of the Republican Party, if you will. Well, I'm not a member of the party. I'm registered Republican. But they would call us the caveman section. Well,
right.
Yeah, we are.
The knuckle-dragging Neanderthals.
The knuckle-dragging Neanderthals. Because we demanded that people actually, when they come out and say that they're pro-life and pro-Second Amendment, that they actually vote that way. Can you imagine that?
I know. It's probably a... an extreme position for us to actually, you know, believe that people ought to vote the way they say they're going to vote.
I know. It's amazing. But the Democrats are having the problem now that they've got people who have to lie and say essentially that they're in line with a less radical position than they actually hold. And people are becoming aware of that. Democrats are – the reason that Donald Trump won was because essentially – Hillary Clinton was a bridge too far for a lot of people who would normally vote Democratic.
Mm-hmm.
And Republicans are not smart enough to understand that. It's sort of like, do you not grasp that they'll go back as soon as somebody who is not quite so offensive is running for the office, they'll go back.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's what they're banking on.
But what's happening, people who normally would be considered not quite so offensive, like a Tim Kaine, have taken a left turn. If you listen to what Tim Kaine's been saying, a guy who was considered a kind of a conservative Democrat, he's taken a definite left turn to appease the Bernie Sanders wing, because you know what they're afraid of? They're afraid those guys will go off and form a third party that will ensure that essentially in presidential politics, at least, a Democrat can't get elected.
Absolutely.
That's what they're juggling the balls that the Republicans always have to juggle.
Yeah, well, they are, and that's okay. Let them juggle that.
Let them juggle it, because it you and I have been part of that breakaway from the Republican Party. And again, they don't get any of my loyalty. What have you done for me lately?
What have you done for me at all? But that's okay.
Yeah, at all. That's true.
That's really the question to be asking. Now, Chuck, you know that as we're talking here, and of course with the internal angst of both parties, because it's all about winning control. It's all about getting bigger numbers than the other guy so that you can control the levers of power and so that you can set your policy agenda and move the country in the direction you feel it's best to move in. So what happens usually when you got big contested elections when we get this late into the year? We have what is known as October surprises pop up.
Oh, gosh. We talked about this on our last show.
Those are the little getcha, you know, stick it to you things that pop up, you know, like I just mentioned one earlier in the Florida governor's race. The Democrat who's leading just got an October surprise. Bam. And a report coming out about how he accepted and has lied about taking, you know, gifts from a FBI agent posing as a lobbyist and basically engaging in corruption to a certain extent. That's an October surprise. Bigger October surprises right now. Well, the just hit as we're recording this morning. If you go over to like Drudge Report, there's a big splash article on the front headline: bombs sent to Clinton and Obama. So supposedly somebody has mailed packages to the Obama house in D.C. and to Clinton's house in New York that are supposedly, well, we don't know yet, but they're just assuming that they may be explosive devices. Chuck, this has got October surprise written
all over it. Oh, absolutely. This smells to high heaven.
Smells to high heaven, and I'm guessing that when they track it down, it's going to be some leftist progressive who thought this was a great idea to rally the troops around their, you know, icons of the party
okay.
And get people out to vote.
Here's how it's going to work.
that these evil Republican right wing nationalist white supremacist nationalists, you know, want to kill us, and so we need to come out and vote.
Here's how it's going to play. First of all, it won't be traced back until after the election.
Right.
We'll be told, you Republicans, you're sending bombs to Hillary, you're sending bombs to Obama.
Right.
You're doing this, you know, you're
This is following a couple of days ago when one supposedly was sent to George Soros' home.
Yeah. I don't believe any of this. And if it's ever traced back, it will be the answer will come after the election. Meantime, we'll get beat up on late night TV. We'll get beat up on CNN. And when I say we, I mean conservatives, for having done this. And then it'll turn out either to be a radical group, who are mad because, this or that, imagine slight from Obama and Hillary. But the real reason will be what it was designed to, get the radical left to come out and hurry up and come out and add to the blue wave. That's going to be the bottom line. There are some things that are, who sent ricin to, conservative offices? Who was it? Cruz got some ricin and what are you hearing about that? Nothing. It came out on the news. Where'd it go? Nowhere. Why? Because, well, it's okay to send ricin to conservatives.
To conservative. Yeah.
Yeah. That's all right. That's perfectly acceptable. To the news media. Who has, by the way, when Hillary Clinton and Eric Holder and even Nancy Pelosi are out there refusing to condemn violence in the streets and the hunting down and thugging of Republican candidates for office, like in Minnesota, where candidates were physically assaulted, criminally physically assaulted, you know, with the punches and that kind of thing. Where's the Democratic Party out there condemning it? They're nowhere. In fact, Eric Holder basically says, kick him. He's out there advocating violence.
Yep. There was a big splash here just recently that, Holder's out there screaming that a minority is taking power that's not legitimately theirs. Yes. And I'd have to laugh and say, oh, like you did for 8 years?
Exactly.
Okay, got it.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
This is all about gerrymandering. Yeah, well, it's gerrymandering until they control the maps, and then all of a sudden it's fair. Chuck, you wanted the bigger October surprise, and I think one that's being dialed up by a lot of folks on the left, including big money folks, is the now estimated to be 14,000 mainly military-aged males.
About 70% male.
70 to 80% male of age, marching from Honduras up through Mexico to supposedly seek asylum in the United States. And everybody's wringing their hands about what should we do about it? What should we do about it? And Trump's, he's mobile. He's probably going to mobilize the military and the guard to go to the southern border. And I would say, let's beat the left at their own game. Let's set up ICE stations all along the southern border. If they want to come in, they have to come in the right way. You wait in line, you come up, we check, we get your information, we do medical screens, the whole nine yards, and if you qualify and it's shown that you're not there, under false pretenses, you haven't been kicked out of this country already, you don't have a communicable disease, and you actually have, some paperwork, then maybe we'll, grant you a temporary visa. But I think what the left's hoping for is, we'll get violence breaking out and people shooting all these poor immigrants, and they'll stick, what few women and children are there, they'll stick them up front as they come to cross the border. And how dare you be so cruel, da-da-da-da, and try to use this as the – I think it's no coincidence that this started, within 3 weeks of the election, that all of a sudden 7,000 or 8,000 Hondurans all of a sudden just decided to start walking – to the U.S.
Right, right. To show you what this was supposed to, I'm not sure what the PR thing was supposed to be when this thing got started. People don't just spontaneously decide to form a caravan and come to the United States by walking, 2,000 miles. It just doesn't happen.
You may have a few hundred who jump on a boat and sail from Cuba to Miami trying to seek freedom.
Can happen. Yeah. But in any case, to show you the desperation, this was supposed to be some kind of a PR boon for the Democrats. And what it's turned into is a PR nightmare. So how are they handling it? You got guys like Van Jones and Anderson Cooper saying stupid things, like on Monday, Van Jones commented on the migrant caravan heading through Central America towards the United States, saying it is more likely, based on no evidence, none presented.
Yes, but based on nothing but his own opinion.
Yeah, President Donald Trump is behind it. It's more likely that President Donald Trump is behind it than liberal billionaire George Soros.
Okay, well, and the reason why he's got to say that now, Chuck, is because it blew up on them.
Oh,
because
badly.
What has happened now, the reason why we're starting to see the swings and the blue wave is starting to ebb and turn into like a little ripple in your bathtub, is because you've woken up the folks who may have not have gone to vote, but now they're looking to like, God, if we don't get people who believe in law and order in these seats, we're going to get overwhelmed with these. We're going to look like France.
Yes.
Or we're going to look like
Germany.
Or Germany.
Or Italy or Greece.
Or Italy, or name the countries that have been overtaken with legal and illegal immigration to the point where they're losing their national identities.
Yeah, Britain.
And it's woken people up. There are every day that the media reports on how much bigger this march is getting and how much closer they're getting to the border, the more they're activating people to go out and pull a lever against these leftists who are out there saying we need to treat them, all human beings, nobody's illegal. That's the big thing right now. The Hollywood left is not helping their friends in the Democratic Party.
No, they're not.
By going out there and saying the stupidest things they could possibly say, that there are no illegals, that everybody, every human being, and there's no illegals. That's the big thing right now. No human beings are illegal. Well, except for those human beings that you don't count as human beings, like the unborn. Those you consider to be illegal. It's okay to kill them off because they're not legally, they don't have any rights, according to these leftists. Kamala Harris, the senator from California who thinks she's going to run for president in 2020. We must be welcoming and tolerant to the caravan. Okay, great. We'll meet you at that. We're going to set up immigration and customs enforcement booths all along the border, and they'll have to go through the process that any person wanting to legally come to the U.S. will have to do.
Yep.
Period.
That's a great solution.
Which means it may take months.
Yes.
But as it takes months, they have to stay in Mexico until they're asked to come across.
And the Mexicans will not allow that.
Exactly. Exactly. And it's like, nope. We don't dump them into our country and then try to figure out, what we do. Okay, you're in Mexico. You can stay there and you can make your application to come into the country. We would be more than happy to take your application and follow up on it and do all the processing we need to do. And then if we, you clear all this processing, you get issued a visa.
Well, Mexico,
that's how to handle this.
Mexico normally shoots people that attempt to come north. Well, if you look at a Mexican map, I once got yelled at somebody says Mexico doesn't have a northern border on its, southern. They don't have a northern-southern border. And I said, okay, guess what? They do with Guatemala. And so your statement is absurd, although you're right, because Mexico curves around, so it has an east-west border with other countries. But the fact is that they shoot people that try to come across that border. Why? Because illegal immigrants are not allowed in Mexico, except when they're in a caravan headed for the United States. That's different. I think the Mexicans have thought this was going to be advantageous to them, and basically Donald Trump's come out and said, if you allowed this to proceed through your country, you're losing foreign aid. Flat out. We're going to cut your aid package. That's not going to work out for anybody. Anybody on south of us. So,
no, absolutely not.
Okay, we're out of time.
I figured we might.
And we are. So, you know what we think. We want to know what you think. www.principledpolicy.com. That's principledpolicy.com. And please join us again next week for another Principles and Policies.